Greetings from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in the original form. You're tuned in to The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and selfishness went wrong, and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of insight, aimed at making each of us more responsible, more cooperative, and more aware of the spiritual bonds that connect us, no matter what we find to squabble over. You can call us toll-free from the U.S. to 877-876-5227. You can call from Canada to 888-810-8322. Or you can call direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and you may be also able to get it on the air in your local area. To find out if an old-fashioned on-the-air station in your area carries this show, you just contact us at bbsradio.com. The website for this show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at spiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All past shows become available as soon as it is humanly possible, or even extra-humanly possible, on the station archives. And my own blog is titled How the Neocon Stole Freedom, and is conveniently located at howtheneoconstolefreedom.blogspot.com. This week, my own blog is on the odious subject of Ann Coulter and her unpleasant habits of mind and action. That will also be the subject of our show today. You can also read an article that gives more details on the Coltergeist, now up on the Iconoclast. I quote that one, too. This past week has been interesting. Coulter seems to finally be headed for extinction as a pundit. Libby was found guilty of 4 out of 5 charges. The guilty verdict for Libby means that now we can focus attention on his boss, Dick Cheney. So this is all good news. Action is working its way up the food chain to the scum residing at the top, so to speak. And now our updates from the week just passed. The battle of the petitions over the Bush Library at SMU. 10,686 last week, 10,729 are protesting the Bush Library at SMU this week. And 134 continue to support the Bush Library at SMU. One of the most recent signers on the Protect SMU petition had this to say, Jim Crabtree, quote, "Member of the United Methodist Church, Chillicothe, Missouri. If this library is built, I will never have anything to do with this church again. I would be ashamed to tell anyone I am a Methodist if this library is named after G.W. Bush." Unquote. The date is approaching when the trustees for Southern Methodist University will take action, either to accept or reject the Bush Library and Policy Center there. Last week, we learned that the enormous donations made to a president still in office are unlimited by law, and that some of these donations are expected to be in amounts of $10 to $20 million. Concern over this is bipartisan. Legislation is presently being sponsored by Waxman of California and Republicans John Duncan Jr. of Tennessee and Tom Davis, Republican from Virginia. They all say that Americans need transparency for donations. Mr. Davis was quoted as saying, "The cost of building presidential libraries, millions. The value of disclosing contributions to those libraries, priceless." The names of the trustees who are also pioneers and rangers will be available with contact information on my blog site later tonight. Call them up and let them know what you think. And now our thought for the week ahead. As we watch the Machiavellian intrigues of the Bush cabal unravel, it is well to remember that they are only the present public relations supplier for those really in charge, not just here in America, but around the globe. Pause for a moment and feel sorry for those who think they control us through multinational corporations, through their mythologies that positions them as somehow smarter, better, and destined for power and greatness. They're going to be devastated when the world as they think it must always be ceases to exist. The human world we live in is created through our own minds. This week I'm going to share a visualization with you on the world as it can be. Relax. Let go of your assumptions. Assumptions too often constrict and limit. We're going to think the world where we live into a new form and direction. You may think the world around you is set in stone, but it isn't. You probably think that the new technologies that can get us off the grids are too costly to be available in your lifetime, except that you could be wrong. All of us create the future every single day in one enormous act of belief. We can change the world by simply changing our minds. We can see the world differently and make it different. This short visualization takes you to a future that can be the one we live. This can be the future we grow into and leave for our children. The day is April 1st, 2010, and many things have changed in America and around the world. George W. Bush is nervous because he's about to start his new job. Bush Jr., as he has come to be called during these tumultuous years, has seen a different side of life and learned some lessons. One of those lessons is real humility. More on that later. Today, demolition began on those now obsolete and abandoned gas stations across the country. Many of these have already been converted temporarily to other uses as the astonishing new technology originated by linemen of Sweden rolled across the country. Some of us are still jarred when we see old Cadillacs sounding like race cars. Lindman said he could put one in anything, and that proved to be true. Lindman is always right has become a byword for the world. The retrofitted cars run cold and use neither petroleum nor gasohol or anything you need to pump for fuel. Fuel cost for the lineman cars runs less than $50 a year. The full lineman vehicles now rolling off the production lines are guaranteed to last a century. In those first months when shops were opening up to retrofit the line power system into existing cars, it was tough to get a date to take your own car in. A market started up in dates with some people making money just selling their time slots for an appointment. Right now, I'm driving a converted Porsche Spyder with a little bastard printed on the trunk. When gas went to 10 cents a gallon, things really started to change fast. There were enough of the retrofitted cars in operation by then so that the electric companies were teetering, too. The line-powered cars were actually small generators that could be used to recharge homes. That made a huge difference in Central California. No more old people died of heat prostration during the summer of 2008. 2006 had been bad enough, we thought. Then in 2007, we lost thousands of old people and children across the country. Not that the Edison or PG&E companies cared much then. We came to think of those who died for the lack of electricity as victims of the war we realized was being waged on us. People started to wake up. Now the Elks are getting ready to make sure those dead are never forgotten. Things have changed in so many ways. Back then, organizations like the Elks and Moose and Redmond were faltering. Now they're growing because we all realize that action on the community level keeps us, the people, in charge. Now that the utility companies are out of business and the former upper management is out of work and scratching for a living, Lindman offered stock to nearly everyone except the corporate types. He even refused to let them buy Lind Power units, so most of them are doing without. Nothing the government did could stop us from getting what was so desperately needed that fall. We stopped being misled by their words because we finally saw what they had done. That was a frightening time. We were divided, and it seemed like we couldn't trust one another. We learned. Part of that was the iconoclasts in Crawford, Texas, and the way the blogosphere came together with them to get the job done. The feeds we got locally on what was really happening gave us the truth we so desperately needed. Iraq and then Iran were a big part of that. We saw the terrible suffering. We heard the words of people who were risking death to tell us how their communities were dissolving, shattered by war. When you hear their voices, see their faces, things like what name they call God really doesn't matter very much. We'll never forget. Suddenly, communities were connected. We were all on the same page. They gave us the info, and then we really did it ourselves. Americans and the truth make a great team. Today is the first day of Dick Cheney's new job, too. Dick had resigned as vice president by then. Bad heart, he told everyone. When Congress finally found the gumption to defund Halliburton and issue the letters of impeachment to Bush and his cronies, Dick was living on the Bush Ranch in Crawford. He and Lynn were pretty nervous, we later found out, because those emails between him and Rove about the cover they had laid out for stealing the 2000 election, it seems. When Rove turned state's evidence, most of us figured it was about over. Indictments went out to people in the media who'd gotten fat or kept skinny in Coulter's case by selling lies manufactured to keep Americans in the dark. John Fund had to be dragged out of his apartment in Jersey City, sobbing. That was some deal Rove cut. He was the only one who actually got to keep much, and he finally realized his private dream. If you've read his book, Be Sensual, Silk Brings Out the Man When Worn Close to the Skin, you probably know about his mail order business. Rove is still living in D.C. Cheney was still in Crawford when they arrested him. He thought that resigning would save him, but Bush Jr. forgot about the pardon, lost it even before he actually signed it, evidently. Most of us saw the bug-eyed look on Dick's face when he was practically carried out of there by those two hefty rangers. Lots of things have changed in Texas today, but the move for independence is fading now that they've gotten the judgments in on the oil companies there. Cheney's new job, part of the verdict, is cleanup of the ground under the gas stations. Cheney gets to use a brand new shovel. That will keep him and a big chunk of the Bush administration and top management in the oil companies busy for the next 20 years. People travel to where they're digging just to watch. Dick and Lynn Cheney are living in a trailer in Midlands, Texas, so he can be close to his work. He's the first man in the country Lynn turned down for a Lynn Power unit. Lynn said no. Let them see what it was like for so many others. Mr. Sven Lynn received the Nobel Prize this year. Not that he cared much. He attended and accepted and then went home to his workshop. Said he had some more things to finish before he turned 95. But we did learn a few things about him finally. He had always admired the work of Buckminster Fuller, thought Tesla should have been studied more completely. When he was young, about a million years ago, he said, he spent months traveling from Walden's Pond across America. It was in Yosemite that he saw his first nature movie of a flower blooming and was very moved as it raised its face to the sun. He saw. He understood. That was 1925. From there, he went home to Sweden, but he never forgot and spent his life working on how to make technology serve the environment and us, too. He saw that what we needed to save the environment and so ourselves had always been there, hidden by those who wanted to keep pumping us dry and selling us guns and oil. It was Lindman himself who refused to sell Cheney a Lynn Power unit. He wrote Dick a letter explaining why. Everyone thought there was a certain justice in that. Cheney's daughter Mary is working at the local Hooters, along with Lynn. Those were the only jobs they could get. That's been a busy 3 years. After Bush Jr. announced that all federal funding was cut off to states and schools as they extended unfunded mandates so we could open up a new front in Venezuela after invading Iran, it became sort of spontaneous. We realized that we had to organize locally and stop arguing about politics to make sure we could take care of ourselves. By then, we had no more illusions. It took a whole year, and some people suffered horribly. Every death made us work harder. The Lynn car retrofits were just starting then, so they still did not have a clue what was about to happen to the price of oil. I could have seen the looks on their faces. Now the Lynn Power units are in ocean liners, too. Saudi Arabia is now busy trying to breed camels. Good luck to them. There's a petition on the web to proclaim September 11th Impeachment Day, since that was when Congress finally issued the bill of impeachment, the same day Justice issued the criminal indictment. They got a special delegation to deliver both to the White House. Cynthia McKinney and Cindy Sheehan each got to hand one to Bush Jr. By then, the Secret Service had gotten the word. They stood down and just watched as Bush Jr. was taken into custody. One of them made a nasty gesture. Congressman Ron Paul, who had been named vice president when Cheney resigned, was then sworn in by Dr. Andrew Weaver, the man who stopped the Bush Library and Policy Center. President Paul then named Dennis Kucinich to serve as vice president. The two had found that they had a lot in common, even if most people thought they were worlds apart. They both wanted the same thing for America: local control, individual rights, justice, and security for all of us, not just the wealthy. They had just been using different tools to get there, they said. That was really the start of what we came to call the American Coalition, or, as some people call it, the third rail in American politics. So after being impeached, found guilty, and removed, that happened on September 12th, Bush Jr. became the first president to be indicted for racketeering. The trial, which included several members of Bush Jr.'s family, especially Bush Sr. and hundreds of others, finally resulted in a conviction that mandated two penalties. First, the repayment of all money stolen by the Bush-Walker-Prescott family and the other convicts for the last 150 years. That came to a tidy sum. We used it in the awards from the petroleum companies to refund Social Security, providing the benefits originally promised. We knew that was an interim measure. Now the fraternal orders are beginning to do the job for most of us. The entire Bush family was left with just the clothing they wore. Barbara Bush's double strand of pearls sold on eBay for just under $1 million to John Kerry, who planned to give them to his wife to be remade into a collar for her mastiff. Today, George, Laura, and the rest of the family are starting those new jobs, working the floor, replenishing the shelves at a Walmart in Washington, D.C. George Jr. and Sr. get to work in the organic food section. Laura is working in the cosmetic section. The girls are in appliances. Barbara insisted and got a job in the McDonald's on the site. There she can get all the Whoppers she can eat. The whole family is sharing a two-bedroom apartment nearby. The jury considered incarceration but decided the Klan had been freeloading on the public for too long as it was. So here we are. The first Bushes to have honest jobs in five generations. No health care, no overtime, and no hope. 2010 has been a great year to be an American. The Fed is dead. We live in strong, active communities. Our children are learning to love learning and each other. Justice is something we now understand and value. We can't change the damage we did to the environment, but we're learning to cope with it. Now we understand what do no harm really means. Without oil in the mix, the rest of the world now forgives us. They also loved the idea of America. It was we who had to understand it ourselves. Every day we remember and thank Lindman for the many real patriots who sacrificed to make this refounding of the American dream possible. Now, can dreams come true? The short answer is a resounding yes. The technologies outlined here are not so very far in our future. That world is no farther away than a simple thought. Let's think together and make it real. Our guest tonight is Lydia Cornell. Lydia is an award-winning comedian, a writer and actress, winning the People's Choice Award. Lydia starred as Sarah, Ted Knight's daughter and Audrey Meadows' granddaughter in Too Close for Comfort, a top-rated ABC series that has been in worldwide syndication for years. She performed her own material in theater and did a one-woman show at Century City Playhouse with a feminist bent. She has also written Venus Conspiracy for theatrical release in 2004. Other projects include Clash of the Wills, Falling Up, and Recovering Blonde. She's here this evening to talk about Ann Coulter, a blonde of a very different kind. Please welcome Lydia Cornell.
Oh, thank you, Melinda. This is so exciting. I love your show.
Well, thank you so much.
I love your visualization. This is what I do every day. I visualize the future I want, and I have to constantly reverse my thinking, you know, the negative, depressing thinking, and it really does change things when you see the good in life.
It really does, and that's really all we need to do, is we need to visualize it and see it and let it happen.
Yeah, I do it with my husband. I think you're supposed to be married to the person who annoys you the most.
I've tried that, actually.
Well, no, because the most spiritual growth happens with your enemies.
Well, that's certainly true. I would just hate to think of who that would make me married to now.
Maybe George Bush.
Oh, no, let's not think that. That's disgusting.
I thought all human suffering was caused by Victoria's Secret. But now I'm thinking it's got to be the trio. It's got to be Ann Coulter, Bush, Cheney, and Rove.
Yes.
Don't you think?
Well, I think so. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. We usually start that way. Tell us about your life, your family, your direction, and what matters to you.
Well, what matters? Right now I have two wonderful boys. I have three boys. They're all going through puberty, including my husband. I'm not kidding.
Oh,
I'm married to a 12-year-old. They're all adorable. But I have a stepson who's 11 and a half. My biological son, Jack, is 12. My stepson's Kevin and my husband, Paul. And two dogs and we have a bearded dragon.
A bearded dragon?
Music. Yes, my son has a little dragon that grew to about, it's about 3 feet long now.
Oh, my heavens.
It's in a huge
aquarium.
Yes, it's got its own room. Not 3 feet, let me think. Maybe 2 feet. It's a vegetarian.
But that's a good thing.
Yeah. And I started writing books several years ago. I also was a Republican, and then I got sober. So I'm sober now 12 years. I'm a recovering Republican. And Tickles for Comfort was the first thing I ever did. I got a series within 3 minutes of being in L.A., and I signed away my life for 7 years. And all I ever knew was this show, and on the other end of the show, I had my crash and burn and sort of grew up. The way all the celebrities gone wild seems to be the big buzzword. But I do believe that once you get rid of your ego and you gain some humility, which I love, you said humility is a very important character trait to have, especially if you're a leader. But I don't think anyone can be a leader unless they have some humility. And we all kind of have to suffer in some way to gain that, or else some of us are born, you know, automatically. We're gifted with it already. But I had to go the hard way. I had to smash my ego first. But now I'm a mother, and I'm getting politically active, and I've been writing a book on Ann Coulter, basically about her brand of thought. Not really about her. She's not that interesting to me anymore.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, but last year, go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I know that you've had some particular experiences, very, very strange experiences with Ann Coulter that were
very
unexpected.
Strange. Well, a year ago, yeah. Well, she, you know, we all know about Ann Coulter. All of your listeners probably know who she is. She's a hate monger.
Absolutely.
And an extremist, and she's kind of mainstreamed extremism. You know, she's made it kind of sexy to hate or hip to hate. But I began to notice her a few years ago, and I really did have a spiritual awakening 12 years ago, an absolute catastrophic spiritual awakening, one of those mind-boggling, bone-chilling, Twilight Zone-ish experiences, and it's in one of my books called Falling Up, which isn't out yet. But in this process, I began to realize I had a very, very personal experience of discovering God. And before that, I didn't really believe in God. I was raised in metaphysics, actually. And then I went away from it for many years. I was raised a Christian Scientist, went away from it, tried everything in the world, tried every material means to fill myself up, and nothing worked. And then when I got sober, I had these miracles happen. And they're kind of bizarre to talk about, as you know, when you have to explain where you're coming from first, and that I don't go into right now. But I have absolute evidence of a force beyond the force of love in my life. The powerful energy of love, which is what I call God. You can call it what you want, but it is an actual molecular energy to me. When you radiate love, your whole world changes, and I try to do that every day now. But this past year was very dark because I was fuming and angry because when Bush won the 2004, or when Bush stole the 2004 election, I was walking around the house kicking the television. I was furious that this man called himself a Christian and then said he's going to go carpet bomb a nation or invade a country. I couldn't believe it. And none of us could. None of the people that I trusted and that I knew in my heart this was wrong. And I couldn't even believe that the senators were Congress was voting on it. So I got up at the improv and did some stand-up comedy one night, and I said, I'm writing a book called How to Talk to Ann Coulter If You Must. And the whole audience roared with laughter, so I knew I was onto something. So I sat down and wrote an article first called Death is Sexier Than Sex to Ann Coulter. And I know it's a provocative title, but I was sort of calling her on her hate speak. Because she seems to have made death kind of sexy. I mean, they love riling people up, and they love war, and they're warmongers. So I wrote this as a left-wing Christian. Kind of, one of my lines was, I never mix religion with politics, but for Christ's sake, don't they know that Jesus was a Democrat? I mean, a bleeding heart liberal. Not knowing it would offend so many evangelicals. And I thought this article would only be seen by a few Democrats. I sent it off to my friend Brad Friedman at BradBlog. He published it, and within 3 days I had 300,000 hits on my website and his website combined. It was insane. And then Ann Coulter published my home number on her website.
Aha.
And that's
and
when I got
the tell us how she got your home number.
Well, a couple months earlier, or actually in November of 2004, I had written her a letter asking if I could interview her about some about the Alachua Republican Party speaking engagement that she had done on Reagan's Black Tie Barbecue. It's some sort of a fundraiser for Republicans. And she had said she was trying to revoke the free speech of Democrats and calling for some sort of assassinating of another thing about killing liberals in her little joking manner. And I couldn't believe it. I read the transcript and I thought, this is insane. I want to call her. I want to interview her. So I wrote her a letter, a very nice letter, saying that I go to Bel Air Presbyterian Church, Reagan's church. I wanted to know if she's really a Christian, if she calls herself a Christian, and if she believes in the things she says. It was a very kind, soft letter. And at the bottom, I put my number, not thinking. It was an email, and I thought, well, she must have a public persona and a private persona. And I'll just find out, you know. I didn't think she would publish my letter and my home number. And what I did was I wrote her immediately, please retract, take the letter down. That's my home number. We notified her at least 5 to 10 times. BradBlog wrote, we wrote, we called. She never took it down. It stayed there an entire year. And,
oh,
of course, like, it was during the holidays, and I could have changed my number, but we have children, we have parties, Christmas was happening. I couldn't change my home number right then. And by that time, I'd already had about 45 death threats. I had 2 major death threats.
So you had, if it was Christmas time and you were having death threats?
Death threats. A man came to my front door with a knit hat on, pounding violently. My children ran to open the door, and I had to pull them back, and we ducked down below the windowsill. It was frightening. We went through this bizarre time where I became more and more frightened. I'd pick up the phone at all hours. There'd be people on the line. One guy called and said, I should be shot. I'm a baby killer automatically just because I'm a just because I'm a Democrat. No reason whatsoever. You must be a baby killer. Excuse me.
Well, that must have been horrifying for your kids, too.
It was horrifying. And my husband, who thinks has no interest in politics at all he wants to do is watch sports. He didn't understand what was going on. He was walking around going, what is going on in this house? Why are you sneaking around answering the phone, you know, sneaking around in the dark, locking the door, double bolting, looking out the windows? I felt like a freak.
He knew what you told him what was going on, though, right?
Yes, yes, but he didn't want to hear it. But we had relatives coming to visit. We couldn't change our number. I begged him to change the number. This became more and more bizarre because there was a certain time when I called the FBI and the police a couple of months later because it increased. I have a blog that's very, very active.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, by the way, I forgot to mention the good part. I had so many love letters and so much wonderful mail and Christians hiding under rocks, people calling me from Oklahoma. I have all these messages recorded, by the way. One woman said, thank you, Lydia. Thank you for speaking out because we're hiding under rocks out here. We believe what you said. We know Jesus is a Democrat. We don't believe in this hate-mongering, the war-mongering, the right-wing, the fear-based Christianity that was being promoted by Bush at the time, and Coulter, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then a Marine combat vet, a disabled combat vet, sent me his Purple Heart, his actual Purple Heart in its case with presidential papers.
Oh,
I was so touched. I couldn't get over it. And he said, this is for your courage in speaking out and trying to tell the truth. And I do it in a loving way. I don't believe in bashing.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe in loving your enemy and doing what Christ said. I'm not a fanatical, weird, you know, Bible-thumping, not saying they're weird, but I really do believe love is all there is to know. We just need, and in the four Gospels, over and over, it just says, love your enemy. Christ says, love your enemy, bless those who persecute you. I try it at home. It's like my laboratory is here at home. If it works with these people, I mean, you can take it out into the world and somehow turn the other cheek. But on my blog, I've never bashed anyone. But I have some right-wing neocon trolls that are firmly entrenched on my blog, and they sit there all day long, and all they do is fight with us constantly. Then I have these kind of muscular warriors on my side, military vets, Marines, all sorts of Christians, and they're fighting. It's like a war going on. And the blog has been hacked into. I've had death threats galore. They went into a personal matter. My husband was going through a lawsuit over some property, and they tried to swift boat us. They smeared us. I even got a phone call from a woman involved in this lawsuit who said, you're not going to believe how funny this is. It's almost,
no, I believe it. I believe it. The whole thing
hard
is
to be bizarre.
Believed.
She says, we know you're harboring Osama bin Laden, and you're using your children as human shields. I recorded this message. She was trying to trigger the NSA spy device, the wiretapping device on our phone. I mean, and I was living in this kind of bizarre fear, thinking...
Have you thought about you're going to include these things in your book, aren't you?
Yes, it gets worse.
They're too bizarre to hardly be believed.
And it's funny, in a way, I'd like to think it's... How can your average American blonde woman, celebrity or not, or just American mother, feel that she's being spied on and wiretapped by the government for speaking out against the Iraq War? That's what's scary. Who are these... Why would the government think... I mean, I heard about James Moore, who wrote The Architect, the Karl Rove book, and he was afraid. He was actually on the no-fly list simply for writing a book. Is this democracy?
Well, no, of course
not. Our freedoms
are
being, you know.
This is a fascist state. Welcome.
I believe it is now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, it definitely is. America is now a fascist state. It's official.
You think so?
We haven't put out the announcement. Yes, well, of course we are. If you take a look at everything that happens and has happened, quite a long time now, it's very clearly we've been moving toward a fascist state, and now we are a fascist state.
A corporatist fascist state, right.
Well, it's always the corporations that have made us a fascist state, because that's who pays that's who provides the money to make it lucrative.
Right, and the networks are only owned by five or six main conglomerates, Viacom,
right.
Time Warner, Fox, Murdoch.
And the fact that they went and very intentionally bought them and have continued to buy them, because we sort of track these things, and they are continuing to buy them across the country more and more and more all the time. They just completely suck everyone up they can get their hands on, is certainly evidence that they view this, and it's not a stupid thing. Of course, it's a very intelligent thing that they're doing. It makes perfect sense that they view these as being adjuncts to their own corporate policy, so that they have to spend less in other arenas.
Right.
It makes sense. I mean,
well,
the rationality of it that's most frightening.
Yeah, exactly. I felt really strange. I felt strangely like the Dixie Chicks at one point, like, well, will I ever work again? Even though showbiz seems to be the so-called liberal elitist, it's not. It's the opposite. The liberal, I have a whole theory. I wrote a chapter in my book called Angelina Jolie's Lips, and it's about Hollywood, the homogenization of pop culture. Britney Spears dancing in our living rooms on television, Jessica Simpson, the cartoon blonde they promote all the time. That is not the liberal aesthetic. The liberal aesthetic is the independent film, the kind of art film, the higher thought.
Mm-hmm.
All this sort of trash culture is something to sell. Sex sells. High ratings. It's kind of titillating, and it's instant. It's instant gratification. That is not the higher art.
That's
the Republican agenda.
That distracts us very much from what's real and what matters.
Right, exactly.
And I suspect that that's why they wanted to be very present, because the neocons and their corporate employers, they want us to focus on those things instead of things that have substance.
Yes, of course they do. It dumbs us down. I mean, there's a new show on Fox about not being as smart as a fifth grader. Have you seen that show? Have you heard of it?
I've heard
of
it, but I
haven't
seen it.
It's like Jeopardy for fifth graders.
Oh, my heaven.
And the sad thing is I have a bunch of wonderful cousins in Texas, and they have begun using the N-word, actually in front of me.
And then they're doing this shock value, right?
No, they actually have, they're evangelical Christians, and they become more and more intolerant and bigoted as the years have gone on. I'm looking at them. This all started with the liberal bashing as blood sport on talk radio. I don't understand when it started. But
well, a lot of it did start with Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
You could see that. And then, of course, Hannity has picked up all of those themes.
And Bill O'Reilly.
And those people all very clearly associate with each other. If you trace back also how they're paid, they get mm-hmm. huge honorariums. There's a series of different think tanks that are very, mm. very heavily funded by the same people who give them huge honorariums. They can get $50,000 as an honorarium for showing up to speak.
Well, that's Ann Coulter is also funded by the Claire Booth Luce Foundation and Human Events or whatever, and the Young Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Well,
a lot of her
yes.
speaking fees. Yeah, they're massive.
And I don't know if she ever shows up at Hillsdale. She wasn't as big when I was paying attention to what was going on there. But this is definitely one of the ways that they do it. They absolutely have to make sure that they're paid, or they wouldn't,
very organized.
Because they are being paid.
They are being paid, yeah. But Coulter, what I really don't understand are her enablers. She just last week, after her CPAC, calling John Edwards the horrible F word, and after my co-author Dan Borchers was harassed and hustled out of CPAC by four bodyguards. We'll get into that in a minute. But the very next day, she was the featured speaker at a Reclaiming America for Christ conference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this drives me crazy, that she's a moral authority. It boggles the mind that her religious right condones the death penalty and war so casually. Yet they consider fetal cells in a petri dish too sacred to be used for stem cell research to save lives. And yet she's at a moral reformation conference bashing the liberals or the Democrats
That was the one on the 3rd? The moral
yeah.
reformation conference for the separation of school and state?
She was at this thing called the RAC. James Kennedy, Reclaiming America for Christ, at the Coral Ridge
okay.
Ministries in Florida.
She was at another one, and they actually then denounced her the next day.
Which one was that? I've got to look
that
up.
That was the separation of school and state.
Oh. Well, this one didn't denounce her. Phyllis Schlafly and Ann Coulter were speakers at this Reclaiming America for Christ.
Mm-hmm. Well, Phyllis Schlafly has a very long history as a neocon. She was their operative when they defeated the ERA, and she's trying to do the same thing today.
What is their agenda? I mean, I know that they put everything in black and white categories, and they've maligned us.
They don't really. They're not really black and white people at all. These are people who are really very businesslike about this. They don't really feel emotions about it. When you see them express emotions, they're not real. They have to get themselves worked up to do that.
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah.
It's a matter of what's going to pay, and they come up with the rationalizations. They figure out a way to make it work, and then they work at persuading people that that's the case. I mean, the whole way that the what you think of as the Christian coalition, evangelical churches came into existence as a voting bloc actually goes back to Phyllis Schlafly. It was sort of a two-pronged attack that was actually orchestrated by Rove, Ralph Reed, and Pat Robertson. They put it together. Right. They were still young Republicans. And they decided that they had to eliminate women as a force within the Republican Party. At that point, the Republican Party had been the place where social justice, happened.
Wow.
And they decided they needed to take women out because women, politically active women, noticed they had power, and they absolutely wanted to see the right thing done. And the ERA was on their agenda. They wanted it passed.
Wow.
So what they did is they decided that they were going to create as political evangelical churches that at that point weren't active politically at all.
Right.
And then at the same time, they funded Phyllis Schlafly and the Eagle Forum to go after with a very carefully orchestrated set of arguments that made no rational sense whatsoever.
What were the arguments, mainly?
The arguments for that against the ERA promoted by Schlafly were things like, well, we'll have to use the same bathrooms. Women will be drafted and serve in, you know, combat zones. And let me tell you, the funny thing is, she had this whole list of arguments, and, oh, this will promote abortion.
Oh,
and well, it, she put like together these things, no rational connection between any of them.
Yeah.
And, but it worked, because what she did is she has the same pattern that she follows. She never says much to anybody until right when the vote's going to take place. And then she will come in and she will orchestrate this thing and to say these things and simply lie. This is something that she and the neocons do consistently. And,
yeah,
and work with intimidation to try to get people to simply accept what she says right then. And then,
yeah,
of course, it's not true, but after the fact, nobody ever checks.
Now, that's interesting. They say things in such a bombastic manner that they...
Like, it absolutely has to be true, and they take off their shoe, and they're pounding on the desk and telling you that. It's very Khrushchev-like. But,
yeah,
of course, it's all bullshit.
It's complete bullshit.
It's complete bullshit.
I wrote a chapter called Suffering Envy about something Coulter had said about John Edwards last, way before the 9/11 widow's comment. She had said, I wish John Edwards would stop using his dead son as a campaign issue. I'm sick of hearing about his dead son. You know, his son dying in a car accident was the defining moment of his life. And it actually made him so much deeper. It's like all of us use and process our suffering. I believe pain is a touchstone of spiritual progress for many people. And it deepens you. It brings you to humanity, to the level of understanding of having compassion. And you know, you're not going to believe this. Ann Coulter, one of her favorite books, is called The Tragedy of American Compassion. It's about how compassion is bad for America.
At least you have to say she's consistent there.
Yeah,
it makes you sort of wonder whether, you know, can you see her mother? She's with her mother on her deathbed, and she tells her mother, shut up and stop complaining.
Exactly. It's like she actually bragged about the fact that nothing bad has ever happened. She goes, nothing bad's ever happened to me. I lost my dog when I was 7, but that's it. As if, you know, people who cry and suffer are just big babies. They're idiots. And then she says, most Democrats have some tragedy in their family or some Jew or lesbian in their background. She actually said this. And I'm like,
oh my God.
That's one of the reasons I wanted to write my book, because I talk back to the complete opposite of everything, you know, that our compassion, our suffering, our humanity deepens us. If Bush only had a little bit of...
Well, why does she have any sympathy for Jesus then? He was crucified, for God's sakes.
She doesn't get the whole Jesus. She thinks Christianity's entire main purpose was only so that you could be absolved of your sin. She doesn't understand at all. She even said the golden rule is just an incidental tenet of Christianity. It has nothing to do with anything.
Well, how do you become absolved if you're... I mean, does she get it? You're absolved of your sins because Christ died for you, and that his death was suffering.
Right, exactly.
That's sort of classical. I mean, that's not even controversial.
To me,
it makes you wonder what she read instead of a Bible.
She didn't read anything. This is all just her own ego-centered...
You know what we should do? We should write the Bible according to Ann Coulter.
That's a funny idea. Well, I actually am doing that. She's written it already, How to Talk to a Liberal If You Must. It feels like that's the book she wrote. She believes selfishness is a really good thing. Everyone out for himself. She can't stand... She actually said in the Kansas City Royals game she went to one day, all the people were cream-colored and wearing Izod preppy shirts, and you could leave your purse on your chair, and you didn't have to worry about anyone stealing your things. They weren't unwashed. She kind of implied different colored people there. It was like all white America. That's her fantasy. It's a Nazi fantasy.
Well, yes, it is.
Yeah.
And she's... And tell us about how you got to know Dan Borschers, because that must be an interesting story.
Yeah, Dan and I, we believe, Dan is a wonderful, wonderful, humble, prayerful man. I love Dan. He's one of the most meek, wonderful men I've ever met in the conservative movement. But we met Stu Brad Friedman, Stu Brad Blah, because Dan and I were both working on Ann Coulter projects. He had been working on, he had a website called Coulter Watch and Citizens for Principled Conservatism. He was just astounded at how Ann Coulter had ruined conservatism in his mind. He's a throwback to the old times of real conservatism.
Mm-hmm.
I guess at its best. I think conservatism as a foundational psychology is wrong, frankly, but because it creates elitists. It creates a government of elitists. But he has these old-fashioned values and ideals and dreams, and he's a good Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So we got together writing. I'm writing from the left. He's writing from the right. A conservative and a liberal come together to kind of speak back to the hate, speak to the hatred, to heal the hate and bridge the gap. So that's the book we were working on, and his was very... His actually covers more of the exposé. There's so much material that he has. He goes way back into the Paula Jones trial and how Coulter... She actually betrayed Paula Jones and revealed...
Yes, I heard about that.
Yeah, she's really... I mean, Coulter has done some very, very illegal things, and she should have been disbarred for it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So one day he'll get his book out there, and I don't know if we're going to do the same book together, but we will. He'll write the foreword, or he'll have... I may have him contribute a few chapters, work it like that. But we became friends through this process of writing this book, and then we ended up having a Republican agent try to monitor everything we said. Which
now,
I
that
just
must have been really aggravating.
It was very upsetting to me because I was giving the agent a lot of power because he's a powerful guy. But I finally broke free from that, and now we're on to creating the book we always wanted to create. Dan is also working on a DVD called Ann Coulter Gone Wild, which is, and I'm doing the voiceover for it. I recorded some voiceover last week. And
that's great.
Dan,
I'm sure that's
going
to be hysterically funny.
It is, and Dan has the Gospel of Ann. He's got his CPAC adventure. They really roughed him up at this thing, and they humiliated him last week at CPAC. He's gone to CPAC every year for many, many years, and he was in trouble with a few years ago for distributing a press kit on Ann Coulter saying, please, conservatives. He was worried that conservatism was being hijacked by Coulter because she was hateful years ago. I mean, this is nothing new.
No, it isn't. The reaction that we're now getting is new because now people are no longer tolerating it.
Finally, but only 7 papers dropped her this time. At she still has 94 papers that carry her column. I mean, she has said some heinous things. Last year she called for the killing of Supreme Court Justice Stevens. She said, who's going to put some rat poison in his creme brulee? Because he's a liberal judge, or he's pro-life, pro-choice. She only likes the unborn. She doesn't like the living people.
Well, I don't know if she'd actually like them. She doesn't have any children herself.
Now, that's another thing, the hypocrisy. Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, and Ann Coulter are always talking about traditional family values, and yet they don't have traditional families. None of them have, you know, if they're married, Rush Limbaugh's been married 3 times.
Well, Rush Limbaugh's gay.
You think?
Oh, I know he is.
I know he's a couch potato, but I didn't know he was gay. Is he really?
Well, I heard that from somebody. I have a friend that was in the radio business, and I heard that from somebody who knew him before he made it.
Oh, wow.
You know, before he even went to California, that he was gay. And, and the whole thing with him with being conservative has never been true. It was his father was a conservative. He just found that stuff sold.
Well,
and because you have to find a gig. If you're a performer, sometimes you believe what you say that way, and sometimes you find a gig that works. And with him, it was a gig that worked.
Yeah. Yeah, he found a gig that worked. But Al Franken busted him in his book, Rush Limbaugh, a big fat idiot.
Yes.
And I can't even speak that way. I really don't want to say bad things even about my enemy at this point. I just don't
just
feel
make them
right.
Funny. You can do it that way.
I can make it funny. I am laughing at the fact that they're such hypocrites, though. But Rush Limbaugh actually collected unemployment and sat on his couch for 3 years, apparently eating potato chips. he's against social services and unemployment. I mean,
well,
that's hysterical.
Yeah. I mean, you can never assume that these people are going to, one, they're not inconsistent,
totally.
But one of the reasons they're inconsistent, it's the gig. What are they supposed to say to get paid? Don't think of them, any of these people, as actually believing anything they say. If you understand them as simply saying what's going to sell.
Okay, so they're complete liars. They're complete hypocrites. And the American public is buying it because Fox Network spews the pablum and the lies.
Yeah.
And it's all part of the corporate.
Yeah, they're good little corporate employees. They have to be good little employees or they'll get unemployed, you see. And then there won't be any unemployment insurance either. And that would be bad for them.
Yeah.
So it's, just that's the way it is. When you understand them, you see, it makes perfect sense.
What I was disturbed by, frankly, is that Coulter has a boyfriend in the FBI, and after I called the FBI over our trash cans were lit on fire in the back of our house, and one night, and then someone threw a lighter that was open into our yard, and that same night, my little boy comes running to the back of the house and says, "There's a man in our front yard going through our mail," and I looked outside and I saw a shadowy figure going through the lawn. With a knit skull cap on again, and there was somebody holding a bunch of things going through our mail. They ran out to a white van. So we sneaked around the back of the house, and we sneaked up to the van, and the van sped away. Every day for months, there was a white van parked outside my house. So I'm having visions of being, they're wiretapping. They have some sort of a signal on our home. And I called the FBI after the fire. The fire trucks came. My kids were out there trying to get a hose. The whole trash can melted.
Oh, my God.
Huge trash can.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, I'm living in this complete paranoia because I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm being wiretapped. They don't know, Swift boated. There was an article in the National Enquirer about us that was just complete lies, but it was something to do with some people on my blog in cahoots with a woman that was, this is a long, silly, very sinister story. I don't want to get into it right now, but I began to live in this hell. I was living in such fear, Melinda. You can't even imagine.
Well, I didn't know it was perfectly horrible.
Well, I somehow felt the FBI was. It got worse after I called the FBI. And then it turns out Dan had received some letters from a boyfriend of Coulter's in the FBI years ago.
Well, the people in the FBI will. I've heard do things like that because they can get away with it.
Yeah, they can get away with it. It's like an outlaw.
It's very scary. But, I think that we'll see less of that now because since the neocons have really been in power for quite a long time, you can't look at them as having been out of power since like the 90s.
Right.
So now, of course, there's going to be a reassessment because people look at and see what they think they can get away with. And they can get away with less and they know it. And they're also going to be repositioning themselves so that, they don't feel like they're going to be as vulnerable. Because they have to look at who their next employer is going to be, too.
That's definitely true.
An issue.
They're going to have to revamp.
That's right. Absolutely.
I have a progressive talk show every Saturday morning.
Oh, tell us, because we're almost finished. Tell us about your talk show, because I want everybody to go and hear you.
Thank you.
On your show.
The website is called Basham & Cornell. We're live in Las Vegas every Saturday morning, and Doug Basham is a brilliant talk show host. He's been on the air for 3 years interviewing everyone, from Pat Buchanan to Senator Harry Reid to Nancy Pelosi. He interviewed Al Gore, every major author. Our third show is tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., it's on the internet also, BashamAndCornell.com, or my blog, LydiaCornell.com, LydiaCornell. But anyway, tomorrow we're having Mark Green on. He wrote a book called Losing Our Democracy. He ran for mayor of New York, and he's one of the owners, or his brother owns Air America.
Mm-hmm.
And he's written 20 books. Brilliant writer.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, cool. He wrote. It's called Losing Our Democracy, How Bush, the Far Right, and Big Business Are Betraying Americans for Power and Profit.
Well, that's definitely exactly what we've been talking about, so everybody should go get that and read it, too. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Melinda. I'm delighted. You're just a wonderful, wonderful host, and I'm so glad to know you.
It is so good to know you, too. I know we're going to be doing this again.
I'd like to do a lot of things with you. You have your finger on the pulse of everything going on. Thank you.
Thank you. You take care. Good night.
Okay, good night.
And that's our show for today, Friday, March 9th, 2007. On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that when any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster, coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom, and may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.